to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, and they do it all over there. You can get your equipment fixed. You can buy new stuff. You can buy parts. They do it all. Give them a call, 226-9226, or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And since we live in California,
you can buy a generator. Yeah, they are also a Honda generator dealer. Got lots of that in stock. So pretty much any shape or size or power you want, they've got it on the floor.
They've even got wheels built in, some of them.
Yeah, some of them do.
And you don't have to pull a rope on a lot of them. So if you're thinking, oh, but I can't pull the rope, you have a little key that starts it.
Yeah.
A little rope.
Boom. Yeah.
A little rope backup.
Yep.
So you have a lot of choices. Don't sit in the dark. Well, actually, it's not so much the dark for me. It's not the dark I'm worried about. It's, basically sweating to death.
you lose your AC this time of year. You're
terrifying
good for about an
part.
Hour.
Pretty soon, it's like, is it smoky inside or is it smoky outside?
What's the number of that little hotel over there on the corner? We need a room.
Oh, you mean the one that's full of all the people who's, you know, firemen and the house that burned down and whatever?
Yeah.
So anyway, people who, what is it? If you don't prepare or plan, you plan to fail, or I don't know, something about that. Okay, I'm tired. I'm tired. I might not be my smartest today, but we will certainly do our level best. The good part is we have smart people coming on with us, so we don't have to worry about our tiredness and our Marge Simpson voice. It appears to be really developing here.
That's smoke quality right there.
Yeah, I know. Sorry about that. So you can find everything about the show. I forgot to do that part at wethepeopleradio.us. And you can use .net, .biz, .info. You can use other ones. They all go the same place. .us is short and direct. .com, however, belongs to some knucklehead who's not using it. So don't do that one. That's a loser. But we've got shows dating back like 10 years, and all the archives are no charge to listen to. They're just MP3 files, so they're really simple. You don't have to have any download any weird programs or get spied on or any of that. You could put them on your little workout thing and listen to them when you're on a walk or do whatever you like.
You could download them to your podcast.
They say that on Coast to Coast all the time. I download them to my podcast. We laugh about that. It's terrible. You're almost half asleep, and then all of a sudden that lady comes on. You know what she's going to say, and then you're wide awake again laughing. That's why we do our show during the day, because we don't want to keep people awake at night.
That's exactly
yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's it. That's totally how we had it figured out. So our guest the first hour is Myron Magnet. We have had him on before. He is super interesting. Wrote a terrific book about Justice Clarence Thomas and the Lost Constitution. We did that in, oh my gosh, June of last year, and then also in September. We haven't talked to him in a really long time. That is totally wrong. He is a prize-winning author, so not only did he write a book, but, you know, it's a prize-winning book. And he's a journalist and editor-at-large of the City Journal, and he previously served as the editor of the City Journal and a member of the board of editors of Fortune magazine. So he's not just some guy, and we've actually never met him. I don't even know where he lives. He lives somewhere in a faraway land, and by the miracle of telephone.
Well, he has another book, too.
Oh, yeah. And we're kind of talking about that today, I think.
Yeah.
The Founders at Home, The Building of America, 1735 to 1817. And I'll tell you what, the whole founding fathers education part, I can't do too much on that these days. Mr. Magnet, are you hiding in there?
I am so happy to hear your voice. You know, I've been thinking about what life is like there, so... You know, in this apocalyptic year, 2020,
oh, Lord, yes.
Where every plague that can happen has been happening, I'm talking to you from New York, so we've got our own particular plague.
Yeah, you've got the locust. You're on locust alert, too.
We got the locusts, yeah. And so what's the story where you are?
Do you have
ash coming out of the sky?
Oh, yeah.
But you do.
Not like when our town burned down a couple of years ago, and one of my coworkers got up in the morning and went outside, and there was a half-burned page of a book in her front yard that had blown there.
Oh,
It's like, okay, that's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
It blew out of somebody's, what was left of their house. So
miles,
we're not
miles away.
Not exactly having that, but, you know, you've got all the climate change people, of course, because it's all being caused by climate change. And in about, I don't know, 14 seconds, you can explain. You know, I ask people all the time, like, do you know how to build a campfire? Just like a campfire, you know, Cub Scouts, Girl Scouts, whatever. And it's like, oh, yeah, you know, you put a little paper, some leaves, some, you know, some pine needles or whatever, or something little. I go, so not just a log and a match, right? No, log and a match. And so then they go through, like, how you step up the fuels, right? And it's like, okay, now make that multiples of thousands of acres and then light the paper on the bottom and the pine, and the pine needles.
There you are. That half-burned page will do it.
Yep.
Right?
It's a very predictable outcome when you let those forests grow like that.
Like that, and, you know, and you get crazy people all over. So I hear that they're discovering arsonists there. But I also hear that some of these fires have been started by lightning.
Well, of course. Like, I mean, 2,500 lightning strikes up on the Klamath National Forest and other places is nothing new. But, you know, the other one? The other one we're not going to talk about, not we, but, you know, we at large. The one that they don't want to talk about is the illegal cartel dope growing operations out in the national forests.
Oh, I had no idea. That's never reported.
Oh, we're totally knee-deep in this. I mean, up in one of our counties, we have... Now, this is in the high desert, kind of subdivision-type ground, but not a subdivision like you would think of.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay, so they had this huge influx of Hmong and Chinese gang members, and then, of course, all the... you know, what's the word I'm looking for?
Russian?
No, yeah, well, there's the Russian cartel, but they're not indentured servants, but human traffic. People that are being human trafficked that are the worker bees. There's like
good heavens.
Yeah, this is a county with 27,000 voters, okay? There are 6,000 to 8,000 cartel members just in this one area. And
but are there Latin American cartels too?
Okay, depending on where you are, because there's no all and there is no never, but a lot of that is has been out in the public lands. So out in the public lands, that's been pretty prevalent. But the chemicals, the you know, just all the things that you're not allowed to have, you know, that were banned 50s.
So you've got like a mini Beirut all over Northern California.
Oh yeah,
just waiting for a spark to set it off.
One of the dope grows, the illegal dope grows, is up by Slater Ridge in Siskiyou County, and the big fire that just burned down the little town of Happy Camp and Indian Creek right in there, they've got several fatalities with that. It's a little spot, like way off the beaten path, and
And what are they growing there, Aaron?
Marijuana.
No kidding.
Oh, tons of it. Oh, yeah, you legalize it and then no one will grow it illegally. Oh, wait, no, wait. You legalize it and then just massive amounts of illegal growing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that Slater Ridge fire was started by, they think.
It was right up by a well-known illegal cartel grow. So, but the place where they have the, you know, you can see it from the road. You can see it from the roadway right at the base of Mount Shasta there. And plus or minus like 3,000 greenhouses in this one area. And most of it's being grown outside the greenhouses, so you can get an idea. You know, a lot of automatic weapons.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah, it's terrifying.
But these aren't your, pardon the pun, garden variety greenhouse. This is probably 80 feet long. And
I'm telling you, it's a different America from the one I grew up in. You know,
well,
and
the state, of course, won't. The counties tried to declare a state of emergency, but the governor won't let them because it's marijuana, and you know,
it's legal,
and that's wonderful. Even though they're totally breaking the law, because the way the law reads, the county sets the ordinance. So. And they've said no outdoor growing. So anyway, that's just part of the fun we're having.
Oh,
but
well,
those might
know,
be things you don't hear over on your in your
we
world.
We got guys like that all over the place here in New York. You know, we got a governor and a mayor who don't believe that government's duty is to keep the peace. It's just unbelievable.
Down where we just were, the district attorney has decided that she's not prosecuting looters if they actually needed the stuff.
Let that soak in for a moment while we take a really quick break.
We'll be right back with our guest, Mr. Myron Magnet, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area. KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start.
We're back. All right. So we figured out that all the fires aren't started by climate change, that some of them are started by lightning, but illegal dope growing is bad for the people who've got to live there.
And never heard of by we guys out east.
Isn't that great? Well, I grew up in Connecticut, so I know how there is no news that goes that way. I know all about that because I never knew anything about out here till I was out here.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. Listen, I wanted to talk to you about a book I wrote about 6 years ago called "The Founders at Home."
Yes,
it's been more and more on my mind. I wrote it because I'm a journalist, and when I want to learn about something, I write about it. That makes me sit down and read everything. And I had the sense that whatever it was that the founders set out to do was something that Americans increasingly had forgotten and didn't value. Well, this was 6 years ago, and I found, of course, that what they had come up with, what their vision was something magnificent and noble, the idea of a self-governing republic in which citizens, not subjects, not serfs, had equal rights before the law and equal opportunity. As I had come to revere what it was they had established, now suddenly we're faced with all these rioters and looters in the streets tearing down statues. We've got my hometown paper, the New York Times, and its 1619 Project trying to tell you that the country wasn't actually founded in 1776. It was founded by slavery and the whole purpose of what the Founding Fathers did was to preserve slavery, one of the most ridiculous lies that it is possible to imagine. We've got critical race theory everywhere. I think you're going to talk to my colleague Chris Rufo about it.
I want to, but I haven't.
Oh, you haven't got him yet.
Found him yet. How's that?
You'll find him. So suddenly there is this idea that the American past is kind of shameful and obscene. Now, in the name of Black Lives Matter, we have not only statues of very great men who happened to be slave owners, like Washington and Madison and Jefferson, getting torn down, but even Ulysses S. Grant, you know, who won the Civil War and who oversaw Reconstruction with a kind of passion that nobody really knew he had in him. So we're living through now a period not only of ignorance, but of flat-out lies. And I've been sort of moved to get back on the stump and say, look, here's what the founders actually did, and here's what the American idea actually is, and it is something that is really very, very noble. And at the heart of it is the idea of individual liberty. And it's funny, you know, we think of the Plymouth Pilgrims as having come here for freedom of conscience, freedom of belief. But they were one of just many, many sects. Those folks in Massachusetts just were a handful of those who came for precisely the same reason. You know, toward the end of the 17th century, it was pretty much illegal in England to be a Protestant who wasn't a member of the Church of England. And there were all kinds of disabilities. You couldn't go to one of the universities. You couldn't hold public office. You couldn't hold public worship. You had to pay tithes to the Anglican Church. And so in response to that, droves of Presbyterians and Congregationalists and Quakers and what have you picked up and left and came to America, and they did it for freedom of conscience. The same is true of the Huguenots in France and the Protestants in the Catholic parts of Germany. You know, so you have, for instance, Chief Justice, our first Chief Justice, John Jay. His biographer is his son, who writes about how John Jay's grandfather fled from Rochelle in France because France had removed its toleration of Protestants and had seized all the houses of their neighbors and seized their savings and torn down their church. And John Jay's grandfather was lucky to escape with his life. He managed to sneak on board a ship and get to America. And there are just countless stories like this of people whose ancestors came here for liberty of conscience, liberty to believe what they actually believe, to believe what their reason showed them was the truth. And, you know, let me stay with this thought for a minute. The ideas that finally bore fruit of the American Revolution percolated for some decades before the Declaration of Independence actually got written, and one of the principal intellectuals of the 1750s was William Livingston, who later was the longtime governor of New Jersey, served in the Continental Congress, and was a signer of the Constitution. And in this very influential magazine that he ran in the 1750s, he drew attention to the fact that so many of the American settlers had come here for liberty of conscience, for liberty of belief, and his own grandfather was one of them. His own grandfather was a Scottish Presbyterian who had escaped the disabilities against non-Anglican Protestants. So this was so influential that 20 years later, young James Madison and his classmates were still reading these articles at Princeton, which was whose president was the Scottish Presbyterian emigre John Witherspoon. I mean, it's amazing how close this circle was. And how did Madison, the architect of the Constitution, get into politics? Well, when he was, you know, he just graduated from Princeton, and he wasn't really sure what he wanted to do, and suddenly the neighboring county to his in Virginia arrested a gang of Presbyterian ministers for preaching or for publishing unorthodox religious writings. And they put him in jail. And Madison was so outraged by this that he started speaking and writing against it. He said, imagine, he said, put in jail for your beliefs. He said, if you're not free to believe what your reason shows you is true and to say that, then you're not free at all, because freedom is unitary and inseparable, you know. And as so many have said, the ultimate freedom is the freedom to be free in your own soul, to think and believe your own thoughts.
I think that's widely believed to be blasphemy at the present time. Let's take a really quick break, and we will launch on that one, because it's true.
We're not allowed to have our own thoughts.
We're back.
No kidding. It's crazy. Our guest is Myron Magnet. We haven't chatted with him for a while. You can find everything about him and previous show we've done with him at wethepeopleradio.us.
Couldn't hit the spot. Got $100 bill. You can keep your pills, friend. It's all going to pot. I got $100 bill. You can keep your pills, friend, cause it's all going to pot.
From the smoke of a distant fire.
From the smoke of a distant fire.
Eyes have a mist from the smoke of a distant fire.
I just wanted you to feel like you're actually here with us. Because, I mean, we have the...
I can smell it and hear the crackle already.
Oh, yeah.
I know. You know, the reason I started my book in 1735 is that, in a way, you know, the American Revolution, in some sense, started there with the trial in New York of John Peter Zenger, who was a printer, who was charged with seditious libel for printing a newspaper with an article very strenuously criticizing the royal governor of the colony of New York. A brilliant Philadelphia lawyer named Andrew Hamilton came and defended him and said, listen, here in America, we are free to criticize what we consider to be tyrannical and unjust behavior. And what could be more tyrannical and unjust than not allowing us to complain publicly, not allowing us free speech and a free press to complain about political abuses. So this has been a theme that goes back in American thought for, you know, almost three centuries now. And now we're in the age of deplatforming and cancel culture, and you know, my own Manhattan Institute colleagues get shouted down when they appear at colleges from Vermont to California.
Isn't that something?
We are in a time now where we are told that not only are the things we say microaggressions and therefore sinful and quasi-criminal, but thoughts we don't even know we're thinking are privileged and inherently racist because of the color of our skin, and we can't say them. There was this very interesting Cato poll a while ago showing that 62% of respondents would be unwilling to state to close friends and family their real political beliefs. Well, how can you have a democratic republic in which we're supposed to proceed by reasoned debate in the legislature in order to compromise and legislate for the people, if you can't discuss openly and criticize openly ideas of all kinds, but especially political ideas? I mean, that's what the First Amendment was all about. But we've come to the point now where people lose their jobs in universities for saying something that can be construed as racist or sexist or genderist, which really isn't. You saw that guy. Now we're talking about the Los Angeles Museum of Modern Art, right? So the curator there says, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to keep buying stuff by white male artists. He was saying, of course, I'm going to buy stuff by everybody, but, yeah, I'm going to keep on buying stuff by white male artists, too. And he lost his job,
yeah.
Right? I mean, this was...
Yeah,
this
you can't say a lot of stuff in the public square anymore without threat of losing your job and nowadays threat of attack. I mean,
physical
attack. Yeah,
absolutely. Look at that guy at Google who just put up on the company message board. Listen, he said, we got a really terrific culture here in this company, but it's important for us because we're, sort of technical people and quasi-scientific people. We got to keep the spirit of inquiry alive here. So we can't just take it as granted that the reason that women are underrepresented in computer engineering is because of discrimination. We have to at least ask the question of could there be any other reasons? He said, I don't have an opinion about this. I don't have an answer to the question, but it's a question that we ought to be allowed to ask, and you have the feeling in at Google that, no, you can't ask it. Well, guess what? He lost his job. And these people not only lose their jobs, but, of course, then they're blacklisted. They can't get jobs elsewhere. So there's something... there's something really sinister going on in America just now with this cancel culture. It could not be more radically anti-American, could not be more radically against what this country stood for, and it could not be more completely an embodiment of precisely that tyranny which the Founding Fathers fought a revolutionary war to rebel against and to abolish. So, I mean, that's what I mean when I say we've come full circle. There's another part of the Founding Fathers' dedication to liberty that I think is really important and that we need to remember and to hold on to and use as a kind of yardstick to measure where we are right now. They were disciples of the political theorist John Locke, 17th century English political theorist. And one of the what Locke believed is that men formed society, and incidentally, for you sensitive listeners, when I say men, I mean humankind, right? I'm being all inclusive here. Men
I forgot formed, about that. Men, yeah, men, you still know men, that. We're old.
men formed society because without society, there is no protection for your life, liberty, or property. All of which Locke and his, you know, a whole school of political philosophers believed you had a natural right to. You know, that as Thomas Jefferson later put it, kings are the servants, not the proprietors of the people. So the first thing to note is that if we founded society for the protection of life and liberty and property, that means that the first civil right, that is to say, a right guaranteed by government, is the right to safety. And so all these calls now of defund the police, what essentially they're saying is abolish government. And, you know, and you can see in Seattle and Portland, that's exactly what they're doing. I mean, what you're looking at is just pure anarchism. And it's no wonder that everything is getting burned down there, and it's no wonder that people have been injured and even murdered. This is what things look like without government. And that protection of property is key, too. And this was something that Madison worried about a lot in framing the Constitution and in explaining it in the Federalist Papers. We all, or at least in my generation, used to know that the Founding Fathers were worried about the tyranny of the majority, that they were worried that if they formed a democratic republic, it might be that the majority could find some way to tyrannize over the minority, that there could be such a thing as what Constitution signer Richard Henry Lee called an elective despotism, like Mr. Newsom's California.
Mm-hmm.
But Madison said, okay, but I mean, well, what form would the tyranny of the majority most likely take? And he said, well, you know, if we're going to have a government that protects liberty, that means that we're going to leave people free to pursue their own happiness in their own way, and people have different talents and different tastes, and the result is going to be that people end up being really different. And they're going to be really different in terms of their possessions. There's going to be farmers, there's going to be industrialists, there's going to be merchants, and there's going to be rich and there's going to be poor. And there are going to be many more people without property than people with it. So the way the tyranny of the majority is most likely to manifest itself, said James Madison in Federalist 10, is that the unpropertied many will take away the property of the rich few, and they will do it either by unjust taxation or they will do it by inflation so that the debts that people owe will actually be worth much less than what they borrowed. They will do it by a cry for the common ownership of property, which actually happened in Chase's Rebellion just after the end of the Revolutionary War. That's what the demand of those farmers in Massachusetts was. Or some other wicked and improper scheme, said Madison. So I think it's important for us to remember that although since the New Deal and the great society, we have come to think of the function of government as being the redistribution of property by taxation. This is not the full realization of the Founders' Constitution. This is the repudiation of it. One of the things that I'm looking at in New York right now...
Hold that thought, because that's a big topic. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back, because, you're having a fire of your own.
We sure are.
We get to follow that out here, too.
Yeah.
Our guest is Myron Magnet. You are listening to We the People, and you can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
I find it kind of sad. The dreams on which I'm dying are the best I ever had. I find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take. When people run in circles, it's a very, very mad world. Mad world. Mad world.
Remember who we are. There's a call across this land. Remember who we are.
Remember who we are.
We were a city on a hill, a candle in the dark. It started long ago. Now we have come so far. We keep our faith when there's no way out. Where there's
so if your book ever becomes a musical, you might want to use that one.
I'm going to play Benjamin Franklin.
You could do the you could do the Hamilton that should have been done instead of that other one.
I love that Alexander Hamilton. I'm telling you, I went. I was at the National Gallery in Washington a while ago, and I was standing between a portrait on one side of Alexander Hamilton and on the other side John Jay, two New Yorkers like me, both of them Columbia College guys like me. So I just asked some passerby please to take a picture of the three of us. And you know, the thing about Alexander Hamilton is that you guys know about the financial system that he set up. But, one question that you might want to ask, you might want to say, well, this economic liberty that the founders were on about, isn't there something kind of sordid about that? And Alexander Hamilton would say, that's absolutely wrong. He said, I'm an illegitimate immigrant from the West Indies. I mean, really, really, that's true. He was. I came from nothing, and there I was on my crummy little island of St. Croix in the West Indies, getting nowhere. And now here I am in this wonderful country, and the thing about having a country where you have a financial system that can bring forth all of the resources of the country is that you have a multiplicity of occupations at which people can work, and they can find that which is congenial to them, which calls forth all their talents, all their energies, which allows them to realize their potential, which in a place where there were only very limited opportunities, they couldn't do, and they would just kind of go to molder and rust and go to the grave unrealized. So, I mean, Hamilton's justification of a free market economy is moral in the most profound sense, and in to my mind, it is the most beautiful justification of free market economics that there's ever been. Now, I started to talk about New York before the break, and I know we have only a tiny minute, but, you know, they have everything upside down here. The New York State Legislature has basically decriminalized crime.
Yeah, we're having that here, too.
Yes, you are. And I mean, and we got all these crazy district attorneys and attorney generals everywhere. You got this case of Boudin there. I mean, the guy's a nut. You know, it's just, it's totally, totally, crime is crime.
Yeah.
The you know, and if you are not willing, and this is my beef with New York, here they have, you know, they won't put anybody in. They cleaned out the jails because of COVID. They won't put anybody in jail because the state legislature has abolished bail, so you have to release somebody on his own recognizance unless he's committed first-degree murder, basically. Now, guess what? They have a new discovery bill out so that the defense attorney has to be given the names and contact info of all the witnesses.
Yeah,
so guess how many witnesses are going to be
exactly.
coming forward?
That's
right?
Brilliant.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. So crime, you know, crime is double and triple what it was last year. We're going back to the terrible days of 1991 when we had for the entire year of 1991, on average, one murder every 4 hours every single day of 1991.
Wow.
In New York City. So these guys are not doing what it is that government was instituted to do, and yet they are laying the most crushing taxes on New Yorkers, which are driving out even those who would be willing to stay. And that is another really important thing that the founders understood, and that was that, okay, you set up government and you give it power to keep you safe by punishing offenders with force. But remember that the same fallen human nature that puts your life, liberty, and property in danger from bad people, right? That same human nature is shared by everybody, including people who are going to run for office and get elected. So you have to be careful that the people who govern you don't, for love of their own power, and out of an impulse to oppress and lord it over others, that they don't turn into a tyranny also. And that's what we've got in New York. We've got these people dictating, you know, when we're going to open this and when we're going to open that, and meanwhile laying these enormous taxes on it, and the third, meanwhile, not enforcing the criminal laws and releasing not only criminals but crazy people and dope addicts and sex offenders, and putting them up in empty hotels in my neighborhood for $350 a night per room, paid for by the taxpayers. Well, what is wrong with this picture, Aaron?
Exactly.
And Bill?
Well, they did that out here,
exactly,
and it turned out they
backwards.
Were running illegal drug operations out of there.
Yeah, it was a huge, huge
just
disaster out here.
Unbelievable.
What a shocker.
We have things going on the street here that I would blush to say it is a depth of degradation below what I thought possible. I mean, you are ashamed of humanity to see this stuff.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable that there. I mean, 25 years ago, did you ever believe we would be looking at some of this crazy stuff that's we're actually living through right now?
No,
it wasn't even fathomable. You would have put money that this would never have happened.
Oh, you know, some of this stuff. I mean, when I was running City Journal, there was stuff that I thought, oh, there's no point in arguing against it. It's so completely stupid that nobody in his right mind could believe it. And now I'm gonna, you know, get you a whole lot of hate mail. But I thought, excuse me, global warming.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We don't have to argue against that. That's ridiculous. Climate has changed through all of history. We have the records of it. You know, once we had a little ice age. By the way, during the Revolutionary War, New York Harbor froze so hard that ox carts could wheel cannon across New York Harbor. You know, sometimes we have cold periods, sometimes we have hot periods, and so we have a dust bowl like in the Depression. So this is the way things go. And the other thing I thought is gay marriage. That's ridiculous. There can't be such a thing as gay marriage. We're not even going to argue against it. Well, ha, ha, ha. So yeah. Did I ever think
Surprise.
25 years ago? No, Bill. I most certainly did. In fact, quite the reverse. I thought, why am I going to waste a writer's time to write against something that is just pure damn foolishness?
Well, let's just not put too fine a point on it. How about more than two genders?
Oh, I mean, you know, anyway, gender is a quality of nouns, not people.
Well, you still, as a man, you still have the right to be pregnant, though.
I mean, yeah. And to get an abortion.
And get an abortion, yeah, exactly.
Gee, Christmas.
And I intend to make the taxpayers of New York pay for it, too.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, when we have you on next time, we're going to play the clip from that old Monty Python skit, you know, or Life of Brian, where he, you know, I'm going to have a baby. It's like, I mean,
we laughed about that
in the 70s, and it's like, oh, my God, it's true.
I've got to make the taxpayers pay for my sex change operation, and then I've got to make them pay for my abortion.
Yeah, right. we just slayed the engineering room. They're all down. Well, but before we run out of time, I just wanted to let people know that obviously there was not enough time here, and yes, there was some foolishness. I'll apologize for that, but we're going to have
foolishness. Is why I like to talk to you.
We have to have foolishness, otherwise it's just too hard. It feels like the locusts are right around the corner. If you can't get have a little fun, but we're gonna have you on again. I double checked that during the break, so we're gonna hammer out of time. But sometime in the next few weeks
we'll
or so, we were gonna do this again because an hour with you is never enough. And
let's remind everybody of the name of the book, The Founders at Home, The Building of America, 1735 to 1817. In which I tell the story of the American founding,
and we have
a series of concise biographies that take us from the Zenger libel trial right through the end of James Madison.
And the news is going to cut us off and tell us something silly. But thank you, Myron Magnet. We will have you on shortly. You've been listening to We the People. We'll be right back. We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area. KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure. I checked with them just before the show.
You called over there and listened to the answering machine?
Yes,
if
I
your
did.
Voice was still on it?
Yep.
Good deal.
Yep. So they're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, and they're everything John Deere, tractors, ag, turf. Go by and see them. And you can give them a call at 226-9226 or get them on the web at papemachinery.com. That's P-A-P-E, by the way.
If you're watching us, I always have my Pape mug.
Yes.
Because, you know, I got a million of these things, but this one actually keeps coffee hot for like a million years.
Keeps you moving. That's their slogan. Yeah.
That has sort of a bizarre intestinal overtone there. I'm thinking that's not where we want to go.
Okay, leave it to you.
Dr. Bill.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So, let's see. I forgot to say it last time, but Sunday the 13th of September 2020, in case we replay this and people are wondering what we're talking about and why we're talking about that. So, we don't have to do that. Robert plugs that in.
Oh, he does?
Bill's trying to give me smoke signals, but I can't answer him in smoke signals. So, thanks a lot for putting up with half that conversation. Our guest this hour, who is Mr. Save the Day. That's actually not his real name. His real name is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, but he is such a good friend of ours. We can just, like, shoot him an email really late at night and say, hey, what are you doing tomorrow? Just realized we had an hour, and nobody cares what we think. we pride ourselves on bringing in experts who know things so that you don't have to, well, you might learn what we think, but you don't have to believe us. You can believe the experts. And he has a terrific article in The American Thinker, and I've attached it for you today at wethepeopleradio.us. It's right there at the bottom of the page for September 13th, 2020 there. And in The American Thinker, it's called The Enemy Within Our Nuclear Weapons, Our Nuclear Weapon Labs. And so I asked him, I said, what should we call the show today? And he said, Losing World War III at Home. So not to put too fine a point on it, but I think this is going to be an interesting program. Dr. Pryor, you've got quite the background. We've talked to you about electromagnetic pulse. You've written a terrific book called The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMPs Commission War to Save America, 2001 to 2020, and they're still working on it. Apocalypse Unknown, The Struggle to Protect America's to protect America from an Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe and Electric Armageddon and bunches of really great stuff. I've got all his books linked up there. Super well-researched and very interesting. He's got multiple PhDs in history and archaeology, and I worked for the CIA and all sorts of good stuff. Yeah, we're not supposed to say that out loud. Yeah. He's a smart guy with a good sense of humor and lots of great information. So I guess on that auspicious note, take it away from over in Virginia land. Far from the smoke. Good for you. 3,000 miles away. Hopefully we're not blacking out your skies, too.
Well, I have to apologize. I thought I had sent you my article titled Losing World War III at Home.
Oh, I'll find it.
That was published in the Washington Times shortly after the other article that you cited, but we can talk about them both.
Well, you know what I'll do? I'll post them both.
Because they're both related to possibly losing World War III at home.
Perfect.
Since we depend upon our nuclear weapons labs, Los Alamos, Livermore, and Sandia. Those are our nuclear weapon laboratories, you know, for no longer designing, because we haven't designed a new nuclear weapon in decades, but for maintaining the old nuclear weapons that were designed by geniuses many decades ago, most of whom are now either dead or retired. And it's my privilege to know the few who are still alive. But they are retired. And so we've got these whiz kids who've never designed a nuclear weapon. But they know how to do computer modeling. And so they're trying to keep our nuclear weapons patched together and still operating, even though they weren't designed to last this long. Most of them were only designed to have service lives of about a decade, maybe a little longer than that. But they've been in service now for 5-6 times as long as they were originally designed. And so we keep patching them together, and the whiz kids keep telling us with their computer modeling, they tell Congress every year that, these nuclear weapons will still work. But most of the experts, especially those designers who made them and designed them, from back in those days, say, well, you know, as time goes on, we can't have that confidence anymore because we're not testing these things anymore to see if they actually will work. So we have problems enough just with the physics and technology of nuclear weapons. Got our hands full with that problem, and you think the last neat thing we would need to do is subject our scientists and engineers and technicians at the nuclear weapons laboratories with something like critical race theory, which is completely irrelevant to their jobs.
And everything else.
Yeah, but greatly increases the chance if you manage to convince these guys, these scientists, that America is a racist, institutionally racist, evil nation that is unredeemable because of its long racist history, and that you, nuclear weapons labs technicians, who tend to be mostly white males, are also evil racists. And if you manage to convince, well, even one of these people that's true, it could have catastrophic consequences for our national security, because we've already had problems with the nuclear weapons labs leaking design information. The Wenho Li affair, for example, that happened during the Clinton administration, you know, when we had a scientist, ethnically Chinese scientist, who ended up transferring nuclear weapons design information to China. And he was never punished for that because the Clinton administration covered it up. And instead, as the Democrats are wont to do, they ended up destroying the life of a good friend of mine, a gentleman named Notre Trulock, who had been the director of foreign intelligence at the Department of Energy. And he uncovered the Wenho Lee spy case and testified before Congress, before the House Armed Services Committee. I actually ran that hearing. And the Clinton administration orchestrated a media effort to portray Notra as a racist. He was denounced as a racist on the editorial pages of the New York Times, and he was driven out of the national security community. One of my best and brightest, they really broke him. And, you know, I think he's still alive, but he's hiding out someplace not doing national security work anymore, and Wenho Lee got off scot-free. And these politically incorrect days with the weapons labs, you know, to now be teaching critical race theory, it increases many-fold
oh,
possibility
yeah.
of future acts of treason. You know, and if Biden gets elected president, you can be sure it'll be covered up, because Biden is very friendly toward China. So we know about this, about the fact that the critical race theory is being shoved down the throats of Sandia Lab, the 16,000 lab technicians in Sandia, because a brave electrical engineer who works there, a guy named Casey Peterson, spilled the beans on it and put out a two-hour YouTube video. I don't know if it's been canceled yet. I expect it will be. At some point, it might still be up, where he basically exposes and denounces critical race theory. And logically, like an engineer, goes through it and shows how it's all based on lies, and it's basically anti-American propaganda. And a couple people in the media, Tyler Durden and Chris Rufo, and Tucker Carlson, Tucker's credit, they're about the only ones who have been talking about this. But fortunately, you know, it got President Trump's attention, and I think it was the Friday before Labor Day weekend, so not long ago, President Trump put out a memo to the Office of Management Budget directing that no federal monies shall be spent to brainwash federal employees on critical race theory anymore in the future. And because it is an anti-American, it is itself a racist, anti-American propaganda, you know, these theories. And that is absolutely true.
Imagine that. And,
right.
And the taxpayers get to pay for it. So whether you agree or you disagree, you got to foot the bill. We have to take a really quick break here. Our guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You are listening to We the People. We'll be right back. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
You've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything. You've got to be your own man, not a puppet on a string. Never compromise what's right and uphold your family name. You've got to stand for something. Fall for anything.
Of old glory and awaken a dawn's early light. But much to my surprise, when I opened my eyes, I was a victim of the great compromise.
Yeah, and that hardly ever happens.
Yeah. The late, great John Prine.
All right, Dr. Prine. Sorry to cut you off. We have to do that three times an hour, which is just brutal.
Sure. Well, another threat from brainwashing people into critical race theory, in addition to the possibility of disclosing nuclear secrets, is the fact that these laboratories, as I said before, are responsible for maintaining the nuclear deterrent, the nuclear warheads themselves. And, you know, I could easily see, you know, people being pushed over the edge by this training to, you know, to sabotage the weapons, you know, to do it wrong. Let's not forget that these people, the people that are staffing our laboratories now, you know, they're coming out of our modern university system where critical race theory is taught. Fortunately, I think our engineering and physics departments, you know, are not yet politicized. But anybody who gets a degree in those areas is also forced to take degrees, courses in the humanities, where they will be exposed to courses in social science or literature. And this is where the left lives in our universities. Political science, all those departments, you know, are dominated by the left. And so they may already come out of our university system, almost inevitably, with a strong left-wing bias. That's where the violence in our streets is coming from. You know, the ideology of Black Lives Matters and Antifa, these spoiled university brats that are largely comprising the brown shirts, you know, who are burning down buildings and attacking the police.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, ironically, are, you know, white kids from wealthy families like that that have been brainwashed through these university systems and have been inculcated with this Marxist, racist vision of what America is. And so, you know, these people, we have tended to think of our nuclear weapons labs as still staffed with guys like Edward Teller and Lowell Wood and John Foster, you know, the people who invented the atomic bombs and the H-bombs, and that generation is gone. You know, this new generation. In fact, in the article, I mentioned a former high-ranking scientist and official who worked at Sindhi National Labs, and he shared with me some observations that I put forward in the article. That the new generation, you know, is not committed to U.S. national security and to the United States as the older generation were, and they were not ideologically reliable, you know, to build new nuclear weapons. And so they're perfectly happy to basically go along with the Clinton administration's stockpile stewardship program, where they don't have to work on designing new nuclear weapons, and all they have to do is just keep patching up the old ones, because they would like to do things other than work on nuclear weapons. In fact, it's a misnomer to call the nuclear weapon labs anymore, since they haven't designed nuclear weapons, they haven't tested them, and nuclear weapons technology is not the chief thing they do anymore. You know, maybe one-third of their work is focused on nuclear weapons. Two-thirds is on things like climate change and you know, new energy systems and all kinds of other science that is worthy, but it's not related to nuclear weapons. And one of the confidences that, not confidence, but one of the observations that was made by this scientist also is he had direct experience. He knew Edward Teller before he died. Teller is the inventor of the hydrogen bomb. He was one of our greatest nuclear weapons scientists. But Teller had a conversation with a director of one of the nuclear weapon labs at which my colleague was present, and said, you know, you guys should focus. Doing nuclear weapons is hard enough. I mean, that's the advanced, most cutting-edge, hardest kind of scientific technology that we have, that we know of. And your whole focus should be on that. I wish you would get away from being multi-purpose and looking to do things other than nuclear weapons. If you focused on nuclear weapons, you know, we could reduce the size and the budget of these nuclear weapon labs to a third. To a third. That would only have to be a third the size they are now, and that only cost a third as much, and would do a much better job at maintaining the nuclear weapons and maintaining our nuclear deterrent, which is supposed to be your main mission. Your only mission, really. That's why they were founded, and it was supposed to originally be their only mission. And the lab directors rejected Teller's sage advice. You know, like any bureaucracy, they're more focused on just garnering power and money for their institutions and bringing in more people regardless of the consequences for our nuclear deterrent. So that's one way in which we can lose World War III at home, because the foundation of our national security, the one weapon that matters the most, is the nuclear weapons. You know, people, Americans, think of them as unusable, but the Chinese and the Russians and the North Koreans and the Iranians, they don't think of them as unusable. They have plans to use them. The reason they don't is, so far, they've been deterred by our ever-weakening nuclear deterrent. And we're really playing with fire to not maintain. We should have learned from the Cold War, you know, that the reason we managed to win the Cold War, and we won it without there being a nuclear World War III, is because we wouldn't let the Soviet Union get any advantage in numbers or technology over the United States. We were careful to maintain parity with them, to maintain the nuclear balance. And we're letting the nuclear balance get way out of whack in the post-Cold War, way out of whack. You know, the Democrats, if they have their way, if we end up with a Biden administration, they want to shift to a minimum deterrent strategy where we get rid of our ICBM and our bomber legs and cut the ballistic missile submarine fleet by more than half. Our whole deterrent would then count on just six ballistic missile submarines. You know, which are not necessarily invulnerable. You know, people are constantly asserting that the submarine boats are invulnerable because they can't be located. Well, we live in a new technological time where the seas are transparent. In fact, the Russians even are deploying, I've talked before on your show about the Poseidon, this automated torpedo. It's a robot submarine that's designed to be unmanned and to be... It's nuclear powered, so it can be out at sea basically for years if need be, and it'll carry possibly up to a 100 megaton warhead, largest nuclear weapon ever deployed by anyone. I think that the purpose of Poseidon is to go after our ballistic missile submarines. I think the Russians are hoping that we'll get rid of the ICBMs and bombers and do what the Democrats are suggesting, and we'll only have a ballistic missile submarine fleet. You know, these Poseidons could follow our ballistic missile subs around, and when it comes time for war, detonate themselves. You know, a 100 megaton warhead would have a lethal radius against a submarine of well over 100 kilometers.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to be right on top of it.
No, it could be more than 100 kilometers away, you know, and still destroy the submarine. So that's one way you can lose World War III at home, by our people failing to maintain that nuclear deterrent. But there's another way of losing World War III at home, a second way, and that is simply by adopting the ideology of our adversaries, because that's what critical race theory is. You know, this view of the United States that was propounded by critical race theory is exactly the propaganda that Russia and China and North Korea and Iran are portraying the United States as a institutionally racist, corrupt, materialist, unredeemable society.
For the people who are being, like, they're hearing this critical race theory thing thrown around. We only have 2 minutes to the break, so you might want to do it afterward. But maybe you could give people, like, the elevator speech for critical race theory. Like, what exactly is it that they're teaching? Because not everyone is on the computer, and, you know, obviously the mainstream media isn't covering that at all. And people who live outside the country who are listening are going, now what are these crazy people doing? So maybe you could define that a little tighter so that folks know why that it's bad.
Okay, sure. I think it would be best left till after the break.
Sure.
Okay. Well, let's see. Let's find out. Can we do that early? Yeah, we'll take our break here just a teensy bit early, and then when we come back, we'll delve into that, because I don't want anybody to miss why this is important, and that happens a lot. If you don't know what's scary about it and dangerous, it's kind of hard to oppose. We'll be right back.
Never owe another man. Watch where you spit on a windy day. Don't use words you don't understand. Find the Lord before you need Him, and never lose your pride. Don't ever sell your saddle cause life's a long, long ride. Don't ever sell your saddle, cause life's a long, long ride.
Justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
I wonder if they ever switch it up. Give beer to the men and whiskey to the horses.
Probably not.
Probably make them run faster.
Makes it tough for a quick getaway.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You kind of wander in a circle.
Yeah.
Kind of on a country theme this hour a little bit. So
critical race theory.
Yeah.
Okay. The elevator speech on critical race theory.
All right, we can go longer. We've got 15 minutes now until the next break. So,
first, you know, to understand it and its importance, I think we need to understand what our civilization is, our Judeo-Christian, constitutionally-based civilization, believes that that government, public policy, should be based on the idea of the sovereignty of the individual, that we are all individuals, that God made us individuals, and we have equal worth. We don't all have equal capabilities, but we all have equal worth by God or nature or both, and that the good society is structured on that recognition that we all need to be treated as individuals, regardless of our race, creed, color, that we all have equality under the law and should be treated as such and have equal opportunities under the law to do as well as we can given the gifts that God or nature has given us. That's what our society is about. Now, critical race theory is basically a supercharged version of the Marxist-Leninist class struggle. It's the ultimate in identity politics. And it says, you know, that there is no such thing as an individual. Individualism doesn't count for anything. It's not real. It's an illusion. And that what we exist as is class, race, gender. You know, this theory, part of the theory is intersectionality. Some of these people, you know, you can be a member of a particular class, working class, a person of a particular race, and have a certain gender preference, and this defines your group, your identity, in terms of where you're located, on this spectrum, and it basically is a racist, classist, sexist view of the world. They think that they're liberating the oppressed classes, but they basically have a structure of goodness, as it were, you know, really defined in terms of who are the most oppressed and who are the least oppressed, or even the oppressor classes. So at the top of the pyramid are those who are most oppressed, who are, you know, people who are, for example, you know, not heterosexual, one of the other 26 genders, you know, and so if you're lesbian, okay, working class person, you're at the top of the heap, all right? And if you're a white male heterosexual Christian, then you're at the bottom of the heap. You're one of the oppressor class. And you can't even raise yourself out of that class by being by becoming enlightened, by taking the critical race theory course. They will tell you, even though you've taken this course, you know, it doesn't make you a better person because you are, it's hardwired into you by your culture and your upbringing and the very fact that you're a white male Christian. You know, these oppressive inclinations, the patriarchal capitalist,
you might want to succeed too, and that'd be bad. That's always bad. You know, if you were going to make this into a game, it would be like grievance bingo, and your prize is unhappiness. It's like,
well, yeah, this sounds so crazy to people that it's hard to believe that it's taken seriously, but it is taken seriously.
Oh, yeah.
Not only in the universities, but the 1619 project is about to introduce K through 12 public school children to this concept, to this critical race theory, and I guess there's a Black History Museum in Washington D.C. That has espoused this and put out things like some of the characteristics, the bad characteristics that are out there that white people have are a belief in the nuclear family, patriotism, hard work, a hard work ethic. These things are derided as examples of not objective conditions for achieving happiness for anybody, but as sort of a sick focus of the dominant culture, okay, that is not necessarily the road to happiness, and it's built on really the success of our society is not built on these characteristics, but on the oppressive of other races and sexes and over the course of history. And one would think that that would be insulting normal people of color or people who have different genders to say, hey, if you believe in the nuclear family and hard work, that you don't have these characteristics. In effect, it's implying that these other races don't have these characteristics. But obviously, from a historian's point of view, if you go to Confucius, these same virtues, these are regarded as virtues in every society. In every society, not just in Western civilization, the idea of fidelity to the nuclear family and respecting your parents and transmitting values from one generation to another and hard work trying to apply rationality to your problems. In every society, this is and have been pointed to as the pathway to happiness and success in life. It's not unique to our own civilization. So the fundamentals of critical race theory are fundamentally untrue. But we are adopting it. Our university kids have been, so many of them, and you can see them on the streets fighting because of this on Antifa. And I say we can lose World War III at home, even without a war. Because if we adopt this ideology and we don't fight back and against this thing, and it takes over the minds of our young and our next generation, then we'll have lost the war. We will have lost the values, the civilizational values, that have made America what it is for 200 years, the greatest, freest, most colorblind civilization that has ever existed in history, the most benign civilization that has ever existed in history. And we will become, in effect, a totalitarian state, based on this perverted version of Marxism-Leninism that is even worse than what the Soviet Union embraced, because it's got these other elements in it. In addition to the class war, there's a race war and a sex war, a gender war, I should say, going on that are also layered upon it. So that is, in a nutshell, is critical race theory and why it's bad and why the idea is a great danger to our civilization. It contradicts the fundamentals of what our civilization is based on, Judeo-Christian civilization, and a constitutional republic is based on, which is a belief that the individual person, is the building block, for all the rest of your society, and that we are individuals. We are not prisoners of the class or race or sex that we belong to, and we need to be treated as individuals under the law, and
valued for our abilities and merits.
Yeah, that's right.
Not hired for a job because you were the right shape or size or color or whatever. But
with that being said, I guess I'm still a little confused as to why they feel that is necessary in a nuclear weapons facility.
Bill, are you using logic again?
Well, maybe it's because one of the directors of the nuclear labs, her name is in the article, escapes me at the moment, but there were four people who were identified in the top leadership, including the Sandia National Lab director, who shoved this down their throats. But his number two is a woman who happens to also be affiliated with the University of California and the Russian Academy of Sciences. According to her own SNL biography, you know, and I would like the FBI to investigate that connection with the Russian Academy of Sciences. You know, why do we have a top director at Sandia National Labs also being a member of the Russian Academy of Sciences?
Russian Academy of Sciences would have no connection to the Russian government.
The only thing that's being affected is Putin is running the White House.
That's right.
I forgot.
Exactly.
Okay, he's running the national labs, but, you know, don't look over there.
No, it makes no sense at all. But these people are Obama holdovers, all of them. They're just another example of the swamp that President Trump promised to drain. And I hope if he gets reelected that he will finally start draining the swamp. And
I think he will.
With the nuclear weapon labs. Well, there's so many places.
I was going to say, can you imagine the sucking sound if you really did pull the plug on the bathtub? I mean, it would just be, be deafening. There's just so many places. Every time we talk to somebody on this program, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, we've got to get rid of all those people. Oh, we've got to get rid of those people.
Oh, there would be tears, I guarantee you.
That's true. liberal tears.
Well, we don't necessarily have to replace a lot of these people. Government has gotten so big and fat. Maybe we should do what Dr. Teller had recommended and chop out two-thirds of the people at the nuclear weapons labs, the two-thirds who are not working on nuclear weapons, and just get rid of them.
Yeah,
nice.
And
Siberia. Oh, my gosh, the Russians might have something for us after all.
You know, right. They're so talented and brilliant. Surely they can make a living working on climate change.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You know, in the private sector,
they need to be freed to
the origins
to
of naval
explore their potential.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. Let them live up. Let them demonstrate their potential.
Out there
as individuals. Yeah. The other article I had written that had the title, "Losing World War III at Home," was basically making the point that foreign adversaries must be looking at this at 100 days of violence and counting going on in our cities.
Hey, that's got to look like a green light.
Oh, they got to be taking note of what's happening in our big cities and calculating their next move.
I'm thinking, gee, these people, we could take them over and they wouldn't even know we were here.
Yeah.
They're so busy running around with their hair on fire.
Taking note not just of what's happening in our big cities, but of the impotence of the government.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's that.
Absolutely.
This is the second precedent we have, because in the 60s, of course, we had a similar thing happen, where for years the counterculture movement and black radicalism and anti-Vietnam War activists, spun off a lot of terrorist organizations, so that we had burning and looting and rioting on a scale comparable today. But we also, in the course of those years, had 4,000 bombings happen in the United States. Now, the 4,000 bombings haven't happened in this country yet the second time, but give it time. The revolution is young. It's only about 100 days old, and this thing could go on for years and probably will.
And they're being by not prosecuting them and by not cracking down on this stuff, they're basically being green-lighted. I mean, you're not required to peacefully protest. If you want to go burn stuff down, it's treated like peaceful protest.
Because you might really need some of that stuff.
That's right.
If you do,
can't prosecute you then.
They can't prosecute you. So
we'll be right back. We've got to take our last break during this program. I tell you what, this hour goes fast. I hate having people only on for an hour. It's awful. Not enough time. So you are listening to We the People, and you can join us at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
But the good news is there's angels everywhere out on the street, holding out a hand to pull you back up on your feet.
The ones that you've been dragging for so long, you're on your knees, you might as well be praying. Guess what I'm saying, if you're going through hell, keep on going, don't slow down. If you're scared, don't show it, you might get out, for the devil even knows you're there.
Well, I know she's not perfect, and that we agree. I think that you'll come to find there's no other place like the U.S. of A. If you can't see that sun, you're blind. Don't be surprised if I get fighting mad. The least we can do is to stand for the men who have died and laid down their lives for people they don't even know. The moms and the dads and all of the kids whose loved ones will never come home. So when that anthem is played and Old Glory is waiting, I cover my heart with my hand. That's where I stand.
That's a guy named Creed Fisher, if you've never heard him. I stumbled across him in the YouTube land while I was looking for songs, and he's got some really good stuff out there. Seems fitting for all of our types of shows.
Yeah.
So Dr. Pry, in the final, like, nine-ish minutes... What else? I posted both articles, by the way.
Thank you.
I just fumbled the ball on that other one, but they're both on there, and they were both excellent.
Well, thank you. Yeah, in a nutshell, on that second article on losing World War III at home, the idea is that, you know, our adversaries, I'm sure, are planning what are called gray zone wars. You know, the introduction of special forces into our country before a big war breaks out overseas, so that they could use information warfare to masquerade as Black Lives Matter or Antifa, you know, before the big war begins overseas, to attack our military bases, to attack ballistic missile submarines, bombers, tankers, take out as much stuff as they could. Maybe black out the electric grid. That'd be well within their capabilities. 99% of the electricity for our military bases depends on the electric grid, so that they're positioned to basically win World War III here at home in the United States through special forces operations, before they launch the big invasion of Taiwan or attacking South Korea or taking over NATO Europe or attacking Israel. The violence in our streets happens to coincide with a technological revolution in special forces weapons that's happening in Russia and China and elsewhere. For example, the Chinese developed, as have the Russians and the Iranians, specialized drones, unmanned aerial vehicles that can be operated by one person, that can carry high explosive missiles. You know, the Iranians demonstrated this capability, crossing hundreds of kilometers to attack the Saudi oil refineries very accurately with unmanned drones. You know, as a free and open society, this kind of technology could be stockpiled. Not all of it is high-tech technology either. The Russians and Chinese and even the North Koreans have got super sniper rifles that can fire an armor-piercing round 3 kilometers, for example.
Wow.
If you put one hole in a ballistic missile submarine in the pressure hull, that thing is neutralized, you know. And our military bases, our bombers, our tankers, even our ICBM fields, they're designed, the security for these things is really bad. You know, they were designed in the 1950s Ozzie and Harriet-type America when Antifa and Spetsnaz and GRU Special Forces were unthinkable to us. And we haven't really improved the security in all that time. As a free and open society, as I said, you could stockpile this stuff. Another example of one of these Special Forces super weapons is, you know, the Russians have developed a grenade launcher, a man-operated, you know, one-man shoulder-fired grenade launcher that fires a thermobaric grenade or a little warhead that has the explosive equivalent of a 155-millimeter artillery shell, you know, which is a huge thing. You can blow up a whole apartment building with that, or take out a huge chunk of the Pentagon or completely destroy the White House with just one of these. So a lone gunman is basically a walk-in artillery battery. There are drones that have radio frequency warheads that can follow the power lines and black out the country. You know, these are, you know, not things that have to be launched by a big nation. You know, a couple of individuals could, within our own borders, could do this. There are all of these things are available to North Korea and Iran. If they haven't invented their own, they can get them from their client states, Russia and China. And as I may have noted already, you know, one of the disadvantages we have as a free and open society when it comes to these military contests is that it's easy to smuggle this stuff into our borders. You know, they could stockpile up whatever they needed, and they probably have already, years in advance. You know, we know that during the Cold War, the USSR planned for something like this, even planned to get nuclear suitcases into the United States for Spetsnaz and GRU forces so they could do things like vaporize the White House and vaporize the Pentagon just before a nuclear first strike to eliminate our nuclear retaliatory capabilities. Well, you can do a lot more these days with non-nuclear weapons, these special forces super weapons. And I'm sure the Napoleons in all of our adversary countries, looking at the violence that's going on our street, and especially the inability of the government to cope with it, you know, are just salivating at implementing these kinds of operations to at least position themselves so that when they want to launch their aggressive war against us, or if they feel they need to defend themselves against us at some point, you know, they would unleash this war first, and we wouldn't even know it's a war. We wouldn't know necessarily that we were that this was a war coming at us from a hostile foreign government, because they could cover it up, as I said, through clever information warfare campaigns to try to convince us that we face an existential threat from our own domestic terrorists. And then, when they've achieved the damage they want to achieve, then China can invade Taiwan, North Korea could invade South Korea, Russia could roll over NATO Europe, and Iran could attack Israel, and we wouldn't be there. We wouldn't be able to be there. Even if these attacks were only partially successful or even unsuccessful, it might deter us from going to the defense of our allies, because we would want to make sure that that the domestic threat was solved completely before going and risking our troops in an overseas engagement, you know, when we might suddenly get into a blackout, for example, and suffer some crippling blow. You know, going into battle under these circumstances would be a lot like going into a war with one broken arm and a boot off, while you're being harassed at home. And that's just one of the prices we have to pay for being a free society. I think what we need to do, I make a recommendation in the article, you know, we can't afford to become a surveillance state like China and still be a free society. You know, these tyrannies have little tolerance for dissent, let alone violence. Most people aren't aware of it, but, you know, you look at the Tiananmen Square uprising, you know, when people were peacefully demonstrating. These were peaceful protesters in China, you know, showing the Statue of Liberty. 10,000 to 30,000 of those people were massacred by the Chinese. That never really made the headlines here in the United States. You know, North Korea has got 120,000 people in concentration camps for suspected disloyalty to the regime. They've killed 400,000 people just for suspected disloyalty to the regime. So they don't tolerate this sort of thing, and they probably can hardly believe their eyes, you know, that America is and has to tolerate these things because of the, although we don't have to tolerate the violence and shouldn't be doing that, but at minimum, what we need to do is have better base security for our military bases. We're no longer in the Aussie and Harriet America of the 1950s. We need to do things like we ought to have hardened shelters for our submarines so they're not just sitting there out in open berths where a sniper can use a bullet to basically immobilize them and make them useless for war. We ought to, you know, we shared with Israel. I mean, Israel has that Iron Dome defense which can be used against not just ballistic missiles, but also drones, all kinds of airborne threats. We ought to have an Iron Dome defense for our ICBM bases and for our military bases. I didn't mention the shoulder-fired SAMs. That could be a hugely crippling threat. There's 50,000 of them that have been proliferated over the world. You know, the bad guys could shoot down bombers and tankers with those. You could take down an ICBM in its boost phase with a shoulder-fired SAM or even with a hunting rifle. You know, so if we were to put up defenses like this for our at least for our nuclear deterrent and for our vital conventional forces, it would greatly mitigate this vulnerability that we have to have as a free and open society.
Well, I hope people will go and read both of those articles, and if you don't want to go find them anywhere else, you can find them on our website at wethepeopleradio.us. The author is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. He has been with us for the past hour, and I guarantee you, you'll want to listen to other shows he's done. Go to the website, you will see them. Thank you, Dr. Pry. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
We could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.
We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area. KRDT channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network.